That takes me back. That certainly does. Willie Bobo, the late Willie Bobo, he died at a very tender age of 49 from cancer. But this, here's what's really important about this particular tune. He wrote all of the lyrics, which consisted of the words fried neck bones and some home fries. Those are the lyrics of the entire tune. Fried neck bones and some home fries. And that constituted the lyrics of the song, which, by the way, was a big hit. Willie Bobo, just so you know, was a well-known vocalist, Latin jazz percussionist, and was born in East Harlem. And this particular hit was, people couldn't understand how come it became a hit. Well, that's the magic of understanding music and understanding what people want. Fried neck bones and some home fries. Boom, there you go. You have a hit. You have a major song on your hands. So I saw it last night and I said, you know what? I got to do this because that was a big hit and I remember it and the joy it brought to so many people. And the lyrics were the same. Fried neck bones and some home fries. There you go. Big hit. So I'm remembering Willie Bobo today. Willie, I remember you today and salute you for the joy you brought to so many hearts through your music and your percussion. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. What is Free Your Mind Friday? I have to explain. We suspend our regular programming format. And we open up the whole program to accommodating what your thoughts are on any particular subject. You choose your subject and you bring home your points, whatever it is that you want to talk about, get off your chest. It is not for vapid thinking. You have to have a point of a view about something. Something worth listening to and something worth defending. But you choose your topic and we listen. And then people may agree with what you say. They may disagree with what you say, but that's okay. The main thing is you get to make your point the way you want to make your point. The number to call is 888-874-4888. But please, it's called Free Your Mind Friday. Please have something that you're freeing your mind of that is worthy of defending. Don't call that lukewarm, semi-tepid point of view. You have something strong to say and worth defending. That's what you bring to Free Your Mind Friday. Okay? It doesn't matter whether people agree or disagree with you. It matters that you make your case and you're prepared to defend it. All right. 888-874-4888. Harvey from Berkeley starts us off today. Harvey, haven't seen you for a while.
Yes, well, here I am, and I just want to say hello, super wonderful Eutrice, and blessings to you and your worldwide audience.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Harvey.
Okay. Well, in a recent NOAA, that's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, their scientists stated that carbon dioxide levels are the highest they've been in over 3 million years. As we all know, carbon dioxide is a major greenhouse gas, and when the sun's infrared light travels through carbon dioxide, the light is turned into heat, making CO2 one of the main drivers of climate destabilization. And as our atmosphere heats up, we and Mother Earth are suffering from longer droughts, stronger heat waves, bigger hurricanes and tornadoes, as well as more severe flooding. And the list of weather disasters goes on. And as previously stated, Bill Gates would like to cool the planet by geoengineering our Earth's upper atmosphere. This would involve spraying reflective aerosols into the stratosphere that would act as a sunscreen to slow climate destabilization. This could have catastrophic effects on our planet's weather patterns and cause a worldwide depletion of the sunshine vitamin, known as vitamin D, which is one of the major defenses against the COVID-19 pandemic. At the same time, Elon Musk is offering a $100 million XPRIZE to any individual or group who can solve this planet-killing problem and win his carbon capture contest. Perhaps there are people in your vast, highly intelligent audience who have the smarts to figure out this climate conundrum and win some or all of Elon Musk's $100 million XPRIZE. The truth is, we can all make a big difference in helping to slow climate change by taking steps to reduce our personal carbon footprint. Eating less meat and switching to more organic vegetables and meat substitutes is a good start. And planting community gardens is another way to slow climate catastrophes. Another important idea is to move away from fossil fuels towards an electric-based infrastructure powered by renewable sources of electricity like geothermal, wind, tidal, and solar power. We also need to cultivate more hemp-based products and stop cutting down our world's precious forests. And last week, I sent a letter to the National Air Filtration Association suggesting that with the unrelenting buildup of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere, the time is right for the air filter industry to become worldwide leaders in the business of carbon capture. Most commercial and residential air conditioners use filters that remove dirt, dust, and pollen from the air. How about giving these air conditioning air filters a second job, pulling CO2 from the atmosphere? It's time to step back from the brink of climate collapse with the help of safe carbon capture techniques and technology. And let's do this more than important planet-saving task for us, our children, and future generations. And once again, I want to thank you, Utrice, for encouraging us while leading us in the right direction, and it's very much appreciated.
It's very much appreciated that you contribute very important things for us to contemplate, but also to implement that could make a big difference in the world for all of us. Thank you. Jesse from New Orleans, you're on the air.
Hey, Utrice.
Hey.
Greetings to you and greetings to everyone.
Thank you.
You know, I wanted to call because yesterday when I called in and I made the comment that the speech that Joe Biden gave was like a geriatric game show, bad game show. And I realized that I might have offended some people. So I wanted to apologize for that and show my appreciation, too, and your patience, and sort of guiding me towards more diplomacy when you're dealing with the public. And I wanted to thank Gwen, too, in her comment about, you know, having some level. Pardon?
You said diplomacy. I was never accused of that, but thank you.
Okay. All right. But also, I wanted to thank Gwen because she made the comment that it takes some level of maturity to engage in politics. And I think that was right on. You know, my thing is I have just been so disappointed in both parties. And, you know, it's like that $1,400 stimulus check was really, it just was poorly thought out. And the fact that, you know, what is it, the American Rescue Plan, something like that, you know, and that had to go through Congress and all that. But if it would have been an emergency fund, he could have bypassed all that. And people would be getting money every month. And it's just like they have the means to do something, but they're not doing it. So a part of my attitude towards these politicians is the disappointment. And I think I should be more tactful, you know, in coming across with that. And that's why I love this show. And I don't call in that often because I learn way more by listening. But I really appreciate you. And thank you so much.
Well, thank you. But one thing I wanted to just bring to your attention, there may be 10 different ways to do something. But you also have to consider the climate in which it is done and how it could help in the future or hinder in the future. You have a new president, you have a new administration. They can't run through things like, you know, the old gunslinger coming into town. You mm-hmm. still have to display some kind of respect for the system that existed before you got here. You know what I mean? You can't just run roughshod over it. Because
yes, and that's the other thing I wanted to say was thank you so much for giving me an example of still having some level of humanity and kindness for people in their struggle. And I never really looked at, you know, Biden and his background as a big issue for me. It's like, okay, that's great, but you're a politician, do your job. But there's also this level of kindness and compassion that you brought about by that conversation we had, and I really appreciate that, because even though I might not like the guy, I could still have kindness and compassion towards him, and I thought that was really a great lesson for me to take in.
Well, thanks, but it's also about being a political tactician. You know, just because, let's say you have the power to do something, doesn't mean you do it. You have to consider the impact of everything you do, especially as a new guy on the block. And you have to be very tactical in applying, you know, what it is you want to accomplish. And you have to take into consideration, you don't want to alienate people and take on yet a new fight on your hands. You know, you've got to tread carefully. I'm not saying mm-hmm. that you become a wuss or, you know, you just become cowardly, but you have to be very careful how you tread these waters, because you will need a lot of these people to support what it is you want to do. Maybe not right away, but a little bit down the road. And alienating people from the start, bad news. We saw that with Trump.
I understand. Hey, if I may say one more thing, you know, the sure. war on drugs basically took both my parents, both my brothers, 3 out of 4 of my favorite cousins, my uncle. I mean, they're gone. And it was really the war on the people. And these people who are in power right now were a part of that whole thing. And I still have a lot of work to go as far as forgiving these people. I mean, they took my people from me. And, you know, this concept is just so vast. You know, the opioid endemic or whatever, it's like, and I just see people, like, missing the ball. It's like, dude, stay on point. Like, we need to get this straightened out. And we're talking about, you know, all kinds of other stuff. But I'm going to keep listening and keep learning and try to have some level of forgiveness, because, you know, that's a hard hit to take. You know, pretty much everyone closest to me is gone. You know?
Yes, yes, yes. But I thank you for your very endearing call today. I really thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Jean from Maryland, you're on the air at 888-874-4888.
Good afternoon, Nutrice, and happy Friday to you and to the listeners.
Thank you, and to you too. What are you doing to be happy on this Friday?
Not much, but.
Well, that was a quick answer.
I do want to just note that your selection of Willie Bobo this afternoon was just so apropos. Fried neck bones.
Why did you
and
say
some
that?
Home fries.
But I love Willie Bobo, but what? Was the meaning for you?
Well, I mean, you said it in your monologue when you started to talk about why you made the selection. You said he wrote all of the lyrics.
That was a very daunting task, I could imagine. He wrote all of those lyrics.
All of the lyrics. But here's why this is important. And it comes to me, and it really struck me. I was I was walking down the stairs and I had to stop. The idea of music and the science of music, where it becomes appealing to people, is to create something that is attractive, rhythmic, and easy to understand. And that is what that song is in every way. It's redundant. It's got a funky beat. It's got a minor progressive chord that just repeats and repeats and repeats. And if you think in terms of house music from the early 80s through the mid 90s, that's why house music was so popular after disco. And it occurred to me that we are hearing the same method of messaging with COVID. Wear your mask, social distance, get your vaccine, over and over and over, with no explanation as to why it's important, what you need to do, the source of the information, nothing. All we're getting is that funky beat with something that's easy to understand, over and over and over.
Were you in of the era of the fried neck bones and some home fries?
Yes. Yes.
What did it do to you?
Well, it's funny because when I was in high school, I was in New Jersey, and I had a percussion teacher who was really into Latin jazz. And he made sure that we understood what it was about, where it came from, and how to play it. And Willie Bobo was one of his heroes. And so, you know, we would go into the room and there would be a tape recorder with a cassette tape. If you remember cassette tapes, there may be some in the audience.
Yes, I do.
To know what a cassette tape is. But, you know, he would play these things for us and we would listen. And, you know, it wasn't just about, okay, play what you just heard, but it was about how does it make you feel? What does it do to you spiritually? What would you do with this on stage? And how would you relate that to your audience? And it was the kind of experience that really taught us to be performers. And when we would watch videos of Tito Puente, Willie Bobo, and these others, you could see the level of spirit that was coming out of them in their performance. And that is what he was instilling in us.
And such difficult lyrics to learn.
Well, I think the message that I'm really trying to bring across this afternoon is, you know, we have heard so many different ways that messaging gets communicated by these PR yes. experts, and the way that they will simplify and dumb down a message to such a point where you only get that core root message. And the other things which are equally or more important become non sequiturs, and you just have no need for them. Social distance, wear your mask, get your vaccine, and that's all you hear.
And but it was a kind of inside, a kind of inside play, where people would say the words, but to a very interested audience. I said interested, not interesting. Interested audience. It was homage to them. Fried neck bones and some home fries. And everybody understood, okay, he's one of us.
Yeah.
And this thing took off. And that was, as I said, those were all of the lyrics. Fried neck bones and some home fries.
But the point that I'm making is that's all that was necessary. You didn't need any more.
Yes. No, you didn't.
I mean, you people would dance to that song all night. And if you think about it, it is lyrically very simple. Musically, it is very simple. Rhythmically, it is very simple. And what you're doing with such simplistic or such a simplistic song is you're getting past all of the intellectual exercises and you are going straight to the core being of an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why music that has a straight driving 4-4 rhythm is so easy to dance to, because it gets past all of the intellectual stuff that is required for something like classical music or something that comes from Duke Ellington. You know, you have to really pay attention because you've got complicated rhythms, you've got runs, you've got different chords that are coming together, major and minor phrases that are coming together. You have to think about that. You don't have to think about fried neck bones and some home fries.
Every time I hear the title, I crack up because it is so funny to me that simple words like that, and you have a massive hit on your hands, fried neck bones and some home fries. I love it.
I have one more thing for you, if I could, just quickly.
Sure.
I think it was 2 weeks ago, right after the verdict in the trial of Derek Chauvin, I called in and we were chatting for a moment. And one of the things that I mentioned was about the police chief who testified against Derek Chauvin. And my comment to you was that his testimony was a duck and cover move, is how I put it. And I just wanted to revisit that with you for just a moment. I say that, and I come back to it, after having listened to, and I'm sorry, but I have to give credit to Amy Goodman, because she read on her show a transcript of the original press release that the police department, signed off by the chief, had given, where there was a completely fantasized and created story about what happened, which they then had to retract and re-report after the video came out. And so the testimony of the police chief was clearly a duck and cover move, because he had to clean up that mess that was created by the release of that press release, which was on the record.
Okay.
So I just wanted to point that out.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for pointing it out. I'm less impressed with the change of the reporting on it than I would be if we saw the substance of it. What was the substance of it, and what did it bring about? Other than the change. See, cosmetic changes and so forth, they're good to note. But did it fundamentally change the case? No. You caught somebody, you know, with their underwear showing, and they tidied it up. That's all that happened. It didn't fundamentally change.
He was allowed to tidy it up, because the truth is police practices should have been on trial, because what the press release showed is that it is common police practice to create a narrative out of whole cloth, regardless of what actually happened and what the evidence showed.
Yes, but what was the main point of the trial? It was not to put police practices on trial. That wasn't the reason.
No.
So that's what I mean. So it created a diversionary tactic. So in any event, it served the same purpose for us to kind of move away from the central issue at hand. I like the idea of looking at the structural issues and whether it changed anything. It didn't.
No, I agree. It did not. I think we would need more help to actually look at those structural concerns, you know, and I'm talking about the Justice Department, who really comes to bat meaning business, which often they don't, where they are looking to identify these problems and then place corrective measures, which they just don't do.
But listen to your talking. You're talking bureaucraties.
Yes.
To me. I don't talk bureaucraties. I'm interested in what's real, what's really happening. All this stuff, I'm not concerned about whether the structure readjusts itself. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in the power that people have to compel change. That is very interesting to me. They will say all kinds of stuff to throw us off the scent. But what we have to do is remain fixated on the structural problem and don't let it go. And don't let it be redefined for us, because that's a game in and of itself. And it never gets done. It never gets played out. I so enjoyed talking with you today.
All
and
right.
Remember,
thank you, Truth.
What do we have in common?
Fried neck bone and some home fries.
That's right. Fried neck bones and some home fries. I laughed just putting this together, thinking, I wonder if anybody's going to remember this song. But of course,
I'm right there.
Can't forget it. Thanks so much for your call today. Really enjoyed talking with you today. Marilyn from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello, Miss Lead. Can you hear me?
It's your crease, Marilyn. Or are you going to force me to call you Miss Marilyn?
Oh, no. That's just how I dress, folks.
I know. Your parents would be proud of you.
I wanted to follow up or say something in continuance of your program about the young lady that was, unfortunately shot by the police. And your point was really resonated with me with community people just like, you know, standing around and just like gawking at, you know, what was going on when clearly, you know, the situation was crazy and hectic, but I just think that, we can do better than that. I remember just being in Bay Ridge and one day, and there was a guy that was harassing a bus driver, and these two guys just came up and just grabbed him and threw him down on the ground, and they said, you know, what are you doing? You know, and they was waiting for and they called the police. And when the police came, they took him away. And I'm saying, like, we have to do better. We have to do better as a community. You know, similarly, I also saw something that a young girl who must have been, you know, on some kind of medication or drug or whatever, and she, you know, walking naked down the street. And the amount of people that just watched. And fortunately, my daughter was in the car. We were in the car, and we just stopped and just pulled, went to the back of the hood. She had a jacket and just, you know, gingerly went over to her and gave it to her. And when the police came, they were saying, like, wow, he said, you know, this has been going on for a while, and you guys were the only one that stopped to assist. So I just think that, you know, we have a responsibility. And I was thinking also that I mentioned this last week when I was on a little, you know, small platform at church, and I was talking about some of these settlements that are coming on the horrible death of black people. And I was saying, like, some of these lawyers, that are attending to these, that are managing these cases and families, one, they need to think about giving something to you know, small radio stations, you know, entities that are making people come out and march in the street. I know everything is online, but a lot of this is coming through on programs and, of course, you know, platforms like what you have, PRN, and others. And I just, and I'm going to tell you, Ms. Lee, these people just, I mean, they like the one that cut off my head. What are you talking about? Oh, you know, they shouldn't do that, because we wouldn't say that about anybody else. I said, but yes, they do, because I know situations like that. There was a young girl in my office that was going off to law school, Jewish girl, nice Jewish young girl, you know, and some organization that they have there paid for her first year of law school, because they said that she couldn't go to law school and work, so that she quit. And they paid for her law school and gave her a stipend. So I'm just saying that, you know, things, I know we don't have, you know, monies like that, but I think we have to do some self-evaluation and some self-critique. So that was my comment.
Well,
I just kind of wanted to get what you thought.
I'm with you on the point of doing some self-evaluation and getting our point straight, because there was a time, and history documents it, where the Black community was very self-sufficient and very efficient at being self-sufficient, probably because there were no alternatives but to take care of your own affairs. But at the same time, we have lapsed greatly. We have fallen off the wagon. We just have not, paid attention to home affairs. And that's what the comment I made was when I talked about what I saw, the immediate impact of the scene when the officer arrived. True. And what do we see? We don't see evidence of a community there. We see community theater. We don't see evidence of a harmonious community or community that is working on some level, working together for those things that matter to us on a daily basis of justice and equality and what. We didn't see that. So we also didn't see the person that this foster mother was talking about. She was talking about a very nice girl, a very, you know, Micaiah. The Micaiah we saw, Micaiah Bryant, was a person with a knife looking to kill two people, two other females.
That's right.
That was not the person that we heard from about her, from her mother, about her foster mother. So the contradictions in our community that often prove fatal or certainly injurious, we have to look at these things, because internally we are not who we claim we are in many, many cases, way too many cases. And although these unfortunate events kind of galvanize us, it appears to be momentary, it appears to be superficial, and we don't sustain the course toward justice and equality. So those are the internal contradictions that we have, and we seriously have to face them. We have to face them and face them honestly.
And that was my point, and which when I was, sorry to cut you. That was my point when I was speaking on the platform at, you know, after church. You know, we have like this group, we all get together, but they were just like so, you know, they were so vicious, like, oh, something is wrong with you. And but I'm just saying, like, we there's nothing wrong with us taking care of ourselves. And instead of, like, you know, you get millions and millions of everybody, whomsoever, like, they need to, there has to be a give back. There has to be something there to support us, because, you know, we beg for what we want and buy what we need. You know, we actually, it's the other way around, you know. We, you know, beg for what we need and buy what we want. And it should be, you know, it should be something that we have some kind of resource there, because we need, when something happens, we need people like your platform and other platforms to come out and get the word out and explain it on a intellectual level that people can learn something and be able to utilize it and have conversation. I've learned so much from your program that when I'm talking at work, they'd be like looking at me like, you know, what is wrong with you?
But they're looking at you.
I don't care. I don't care because before I platform Ms. Lee, I think I get nervous and I get a little apprehensive, but I think about you. And I said, you know what? How would she present this? So that was my thought. And I didn't think, I wanted to hear what the audience was thinking when I was, what the audience would say about, you know, a lot of these big firms, they're not big firms, but, you know, they get these awards and they get their third percent of it. The 33rd and a third or whatever it is. And I think that they, you know, could get some, not, you know, something.
Well, you see, here's what we have to appreciate. That is business. That's not justice. That's business.
Yeah, okay.
They take a case. They get rewarded in mutual agreement with the client. But that is business.
Okay.
Many people still confuse the two, that business is and justice are the same thing. If they get an award from the court, that is justice. It is not. It's just business. We have to learn to distinguish the two and work toward justice. We can't deny that as the people who win these awards, they deserve to be rewarded for their effort.
No, I agree. Mm-hmm.
But that is a business decision.
Okay.
That is business.
Okay.
Like you would go to any lawyer who wins an award for you. That's business. They'll take a third of a cut or whatever it is that you mutually agree to. But it isn't necessarily justice.
Yeah.
We have to always have the hammer. You know, you think you're playing cards, but there's a whole other game that involves a hammer.
Okay.
You have to be able to break the standard operating procedure, which is that's all they want. Now goodbye. I'm on to the next thing.
That's what it looks like to me.
I know it looks like that to many people. And here is the thing. Again, we always forget our history. That is not the way the traditional Black lawyer functioned in our community. Traditionally, Black lawyers and Black law firms were an integral part of our community and worked with the community on causes of justice. And that was the symbiotic relationship. But I can't be too critical of the Black lawyers, because I know how many Black lawyers have had to sacrifice in order simply to be in the Black community as a Black lawyer, to be available, even if they're not justly rewarded. But to be available, to be some kind of an intercessor with the system. Without those people making those kinds of sacrifices, I tell you, the Black community would have suffered incredibly. And even now, it pales in comparison to the suffering that the community has sustained. We need more Black lawyers. We need more Black lawyers in the tradition of the old Black lawyers that we used to have.
In the tradition. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your time. And let's, you know, give somebody else a moment to.
All right, Marilyn. Thank you for calling. We'll take this short break and come back to your calls right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on BRN.FM. It is Free Your Mind Friday. Gwen is up next to free her mind. Gwen, what are you freeing your mind of today?
Mind of just a little bit of information regarding the neck bones. I want you to know that Yes, I live in Manhattan, but I live in the neighborhood of East Harlem for 35 years. So when you come to one of my fundraisers, when I run for public office, guess what we're serving? I have people that you know, have to do the cooking. Here we are at the projects, and we got a gigantic thing. We got a vat of turkey wings, and we have the neck bones, and everybody's jamming. So, you know, I'm right there with you. I know where you are. I also, you know, I went out shopping with the lady who was doing the cooking, and she said, oh, we got to get in there. We got to get these turkey wings. We got to get the neck bones. And I'm like, are you sure you're supposed to eat the neck bones? And she said, oh, yes. She said, you're going to love them. So on the fence of the projects went my gigantic sign, vote Gwen. Fight the good battles and win, okay? My last name is Pretty Win. So it was pretty funny, and we got a lot of people that pulled right up, and they were ready. They brought their forks and their knives, and they're ready to go. So that's my little cultural woe for you or tale. But I know because Gary Knoll covers the subject of the vaccines and the disease so thoroughly, probably more thoroughly than anyone else does in the country or in the world. So, you know, a lot of the decisions I've been making are based a lot on what he says. I don't follow everything that somebody says, but I feel that the information that I'm getting from him is so much more thorough. And then I have a friend who's very, very involved in medicine. So, you know, at least for the time being, I have decided not to take the vaccine. And what's on my mind is that it is really hard to get a job anyway because of the pandemic. And then the next hurdle now is, do you have this little card that you have to have with you? And it really scares me. I've been taking care of my parents for the last couple months, and I'm back in New York, and I went in starting to look for some work again. And everybody was fired, by the way, last year from my job on March the 23rd. So I was looking and talking, and the woman I was with, just my friend, started just to bang on my arm and just say, no, anything. We were talking about the disease, and just don't talk about that. So, all right, I didn't talk about it. But I want to tell you something. I deeply resent people saying that you can't have a job, you can't get on an airplane, and you can't do almost everything in society unless you have this vaccine. And the reason why is because the vaccine does not cure the disease. It does not stop you from getting the disease, and it does not prevent you from giving the disease. The only thing it does is it mitigates some of the circumstances of the disease, some of the symptoms. And I would be perfectly happy and think it is perfectly fair for you to ask me to take a test to see if I have the disease before I would come on shift with you. But the idea of saying that unless you're willing to put this drug in your body, which my understanding is that you are putting something in your body which is going to go into your DNA, and it's going to turn on a spigot so that you can manufacture that disease in your own body in order to create the antibodies. But the problem is, once you turn the spigot on, you can't turn it off. And what could happen over the next 5-10 years is you could end up getting other kinds of autoimmune diseases. And I would say, for me, at my age, that I don't want to live the rest of my life fighting autoimmune diseases. So how I've kept myself and my family happy, not happy, healthy, was by making the vitamin cocktail in the morning of the D, the zinc, I give them garlic, and C. And, you know, we're all really healthy. We've all been doing really well. Nobody got sick. Nobody got the disease. Of course, when I take my parents out, I suit them up like astronauts do. And I'm very, very respectful that this is a disease. I know this is a disease, and I know that you have to be careful about it. But to say to people that you shall not work, you shall not go anywhere, you can't be in a group anymore. And then, you know, some of the new information I've been hearing, I think yesterday this came out on Gary Knoll, which was interesting and kind of alarming, is that people who actually are getting this shot are because they're creating COVID in their own body, they might be shedding some of that disease to other people around them that don't have it. So it just seems to me that with a product that is still in the initial testing phase, these vaccines are actually considered in the testing phase. However, they've been released because they say we have a pandemic. So they've been released in the testing phase. So they won't be finished these tests until the year 2023. And I don't feel comfortable taking my healthy body and putting it into that situation. However, I'm taking the precautions. And I absolutely think it's fair and legitimate for you to say to me, will you test to see if you have the virus before you come and work for me or before you get on an airplane? I think that's very legitimate. But for you, for the people that are deciding the laws right now, to say to people, you're not allowed to work or you can't get on an airplane, I feel really that it's very unfair. Now, I'm freeing my mind of that, and I also know that there's probably lots of ears that listen to this program that, you know, scary people. I don't mean our viewers, I mean the government things and stuff, people that, anyway, because I have to say that is something else that bothers me, is that my freedom of speech has been so self-censored. I'm afraid to say what's on my mind, and I'm afraid because I think we're at a time where you can easily be blackballed, you can easily be pushed out of all kinds of social things. And, you know, even in my family, my mother, you know, she wanted to take that vaccine very badly because she watches CNBC all day long, which is like it's like a nonstop commercial about this disease, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And she watches it from 8 o'clock in the morning till 11 o'clock at night. And so, you know, we went ahead and let her have it because she wanted it. But I just feel like if you want to take it, that's your decision. And there are a lot of people who have very legitimate reasons. I mean, if you have diseases already, or you have diabetes and things that are compromising your immune system, then it might be a great comfort to you to know that if you do get it, you won't die from it. You'll just have a lesser symptomatic disease. But to me, I feel very healthy. I think my health is good. And I just want to maintain that. And I also would like to work. And I'd like to be able to say in public what my opinions are. And right now, I don't think we live in a country where you can do that. And that's my beef on Friday. So I'm free in my mind.
Well, you know, what you're talking about is the very essence of what is a democracy anyway? What is democracy? What is it that we understand our rights to be? When in the exercise of your, what you understand your rights to be, the government supersedes that or can supersede it and say, no, this is what you will do. You will get a vaccine or else. Now, I have not gotten a vaccine. I don't see myself getting one. But this is very touchy. This is a very touchy question. And it is not a simple one. It is a very highly technical discussion that this country refuses to have. Where do my rights stop? And where does the government rights stop? Who has more rights than the other? Why should one have more rights than the other? I should have rights. The government has its rights and so forth. But the question has not been resolved. It has not even been nationally discussed as a legitimate issue. And what we have are people in different sectors exercising certain, I mean, arbitrarily making certain decisions over other people's health and health choices. That is not part of what I consider to be a democratic process. It shouldn't be that way.
I agree. People
own their bodies. They own their bodies. They have a right to decide what they want to do with their bodies. And I do appreciate the fact that there is this pandemic. But we can't decide to throw the individual's rights out the window as if they don't exist or they shouldn't exist. And the government operate, you know, autocratically. This is what is going to happen. No, we've crossed the line. So there seems to be no easy way to let people exercise their own their own rights and to respect that, because under the guise that we are in a pandemic means automatically you have to give up your rights to the state. The state is the supreme authority here. And right. That doesn't seem to be in the spirit of what we understand our constitutional rights to be.
You know, I just want to tack on one last thing in this conversation, and one of the strongest reasons why I don't want to take this is that my sister's son has autism, and he was a beautiful boy until he went and got those shots. And I can't tell people and explain to people how horrible it is and what's happened to really our whole family, because this affected everybody. It affected her marriage. It affects her being able to travel because he won't go anywhere. The police have to be called a lot of times because now he's almost 6 feet tall and he has meltdowns like a 2-year-old child. And, you know, when I think of all the things this boy has lost, the ability to date in a normal fashion, just having a normal life ahead of him, love, all these things that have been kept, the suffering that this beautiful young man has gone through because he got shot up with a bunch of junk that my little sister just didn't know. How would she know? She thought she was doing the right thing. And I just think from that experience, I have learned a lot. And I'm very careful because I don't see anybody doing anything about autism in this country. And it's the population just gets bigger and bigger. And we continue with this nonsense of saying that, you know, we don't know what it is and we don't know whether it has anything to do. But it could very well have something to do with vaccines. And there are lots of people like Robert Kennedy Jr. that are doing great work, and Gary Null for sure, that can show the correlation. And so before I just shoot my healthy body, which doesn't look exactly the way I want it to look, but it's healthy and it works, up with a bunch of junk. Okay, I would like my hips to be a little thinner, okay? But for all intents and reasons, I got to tell you something, it works like a charm. The only bad part is my knee. So far, so good. And that is why I'm not just going to throw my body into some test for some people that are going to make $1 billion off it. You know, they're just going to have to find another way. But I know that they can be very vindictive, these people at the top, and it looks that they want an ultimate control of all the world's population, and it's very, very frightening. And I have many times not talked about this on the show when I've called you, but it's been on my mind, and today I thought I could really get in trouble from somebody else hearing this, or I could just putting this out there is maybe it's a really bad thing, but I suppose if we don't have the courage to step up to the plate and speak about things that, you know, could really bring down a lot of bad things on you, that none of these things will change. So let me put my foot in the water along with Gary Null and other people who have been really brave and courageous. And I just think we need to have a lot more discussion about this.
I agree. And we will. I agree very much. Because, we've had pandemics, except they weren't called that. Right. We've had many pandemics in this nation. And the record shows that for the most part, people of color have paid an inordinate price. They've conducted experiments. There have been all kinds of atrocious outcomes for which nobody has paid. Nobody has been outed. Nobody has been blamed. Nobody has been forced to pay compensation. But believe me, there are cases and they're documented. We just haven't treated them as pandemics because they were designed to afflict many different populations that lack power. And so for years, these things have gone unnoticed or not covered. And to the general public, nothing like this has happened. It just has not occurred. We can talk about the syphilis experiments.
Yeah.
And what they did. I mean, there's a whole long list. The Native Americans, what they did with the smallpox and introducing other forms of diseases that basically wiped them out. So we have a long and sordid history of these things happening, and we're seeing that they're happening again, and they must stop. I have to thank you so much, Gwen, for calling today and for laying out the case as humanely as you did, so that we understand, we get it, and we see it from an entirely different perspective, an entirely different human perspective. Thanks so much for that. We've come to the end of our program today. I thank you all for freeing your mind and doing so in my company. I feel very honored about that. But it's the weekend soon to start. Surround yourselves with people who bring good things to your life, good dimension to your life. Have a little bit of fun, and let's meet again on Monday. Bye-bye.